Now at noon, PG&E's top brass expected to answer to state regulators. They want to know how last week's mass power shutoff played out and the lessons that were learned. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kenny Choi.
And I'm Michelle Griego. The California Public Utility Commission called for the emergency meeting last night. KPIX5's Jackie Ward on the tough questions PG&E is about to face.
In less than an hour, PG&E's top executives will face some really tough questions from the state's Public Utilities Commission. Some critics of PG&E's are happy about it.
Well, I think the Public Utilities Commission is just as disgusted with PG&E as everyone else is.
Community advocate Mindy Spatt says while she is pleased with the PUC calling this emergency meeting, she's skeptical.
The Public Utilities Commission authorized the PG&E shutoff program that turned into such an utter debacle. So obviously the commission needs to hold PG&E more accountable and needs to impose stricter standards on this company.
The president of the CPUC calls last week's public safety power shutoff an unacceptable situation that should never be repeated. It affected millions of people, forced businesses and schools to close, and seriously disrupted the lives of those most vulnerable. State Senator Scott Wiener says PG&E is too used to getting its way.
Their CEO continues to just blanket defend the scale of this blackout affecting millions of people. They're not self-aware of how impactful in a negative way their actions are.
PG&E CEO Bill Johnson says he recognizes the hardships people faced, but they decided to turn the power off to save lives.
So while our work is not entirely complete, I think I can say this much. These outages were intended solely to keep our communities safe from wildfire. And we achieved that purpose. We did not have catastrophic wildfire.
The meeting starts at 1 this afternoon. In San Francisco, Jackie Ward, KPIX5.
The CPUC regulates services and utilities and assures Californians they have access to safe and reliable utility infrastructure.
Turning to our fire watch, right now a wildfire that was burning in Lake County is 100% contained. Video shows the hills glowing with flames yesterday. It destroyed more than 25 acres. Officials say that wind gusts threatened nearby communities as well. The fire broke out along Highway 29 north of Hidden Valley Lake around 8 last night. Some people in that area were told to evacuate, but those orders were lifted late last night. Highway 29, by the way, is now back open in both directions. Police need your help finding these suspected package thieves. Three unknown suspects stole Amazon packages from the porch of several residences on Center Point Drive near the Great Mall in Milpitas. The thefts were captured on security cameras. If you recognize these two men, police want to hear from you.
New at noon, Mark Hurd, CEO of Oracle and former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, has died. Hurd had been CEO since 2010. He took a leave of absence last month for an undisclosed medical reason. Oracle's founder and chairman, Larry Ellison, confirmed his death this morning. Hurd is survived by his wife and two daughters. Mark Hurd was 62 years old.
Today at the White House, it's trying to manage damage control over comments made by Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. Nicole Killian reports that the big question is over quid pro quo with Ukraine.
He's like, look, this is a corrupt place. I don't want to send them a bunch of money.
Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney appeared to link the president's decision to withhold nearly $400 million in military aid to Ukraine with a debunked theory that Ukraine secretly helped Hillary Clinton and 2016 election meddling originated there.
Did he also mention to me in the past that the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money.
Reporters gave Mulvaney a chance to clarify his comment during a White House briefing.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happened as well.
We do that all the time with foreign policy.
Later, Mulvaney issued a statement saying there was absolutely no quid pro quo and the president never told him to withhold any money over a server. The White House is blaming the media.
He did a great job. He mentioned the same message over and over and over. And now the media, of course, is, you know, we put a statement out clarifying some of the things that the media got themselves in a tizzy over.
Democrats running the impeachment inquiry against President Trump pounced on Mulvaney's comments, calling them a confession.
He can back it up now that he's recognized what he has said. But he said essentially what the president said, which was they used $390 million of U.S. taxpayer dollars to leverage the Ukrainians to help Donald Trump in his upcoming election.
Mulvaney worked with Energy Secretary Rick Perry and Ambassador to the EU Gordon Sondland on the president's Ukraine policy. Sondland testified about his role in Ukraine Thursday, the same day Secretary Perry announced his resignation from the Trump administration. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
And Perry telling Fox News today that his departure has nothing to do with Ukraine.
Some explosions and fighting continued along the Turkish-Syrian border today, despite the U.S. announcing Turkey agreed to pause its offensive for 5 days. The deal would move Kurdish forces from a so-called safe zone along the Turkish border, but it's unclear how it will be implemented. Still, President Trump says the brokered ceasefire is working out so far. Defense Secretary Mark Esper says the agreement does not impact the planned withdrawal of U.S. troops, and no U.S. ground forces will participate in the safe zone. Critics have sharply condemned the deal, saying it essentially gives Turkey what it wanted. World leaders are calling on Turkey to withdraw, something it's under no obligation to do, according to the U.S. plan.
A dramatic shootout on the streets in Mexico. Security forces traded gunfire with members of the Sinaloa drug cartel, then took the son of drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman into custody. Errol Barnett explains how that set off even more violence.
It was a battle zone Thursday in the city of Culiacan, Mexico, the historic homeland to the violent Sinaloa drug cartel. Police confirmed they were patrolling a neighborhood when they were fired upon from a house. Once they fought back and entered that house, they captured and arrested Ovidio Guzman Lopez, a key figure in the cartel, after his father, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, began a life sentence in the U.S. back in July. Washington Post Mexico Bureau Chief Kevin Seif.
Once word gets out that El Chapo's son has been detained by the Mexican security forces, like all hell breaks loose.
Police appeared to be outgunned by drug cartel forces as civilians ran for safety. Cartel members setting vehicles on fire to block roads, preventing security forces from maneuvering as men with heavy machine guns opened fire.
I don't think we've really seen anything like this on this scale in Mexico, maybe ever. Mexico's own security forces don't have the ability to defeat a cartel with, you know, all the gun power that the Mexican military has and Mexican police.
To stem the violence, Mexican security officials were forced to release Guzman.
It's just such a remarkable embarrassment for the Mexican government. You know, El Chapo's escape from prison probably would go at the top of that list, and this is probably just after that.
Now, Mexican authorities aren't the only ones who've been trying to apprehend Ovidio Guzman. He and his elder brother Joaquin were indicted on charges of drug trafficking here in the U.S. 2 years ago. But as of right now, they remain free. Errol Barnett, CBS News, New York.
History is being made high above the Earth right now. These are live pictures of the first ever all-female spacewalk. This is inside the International Space Station, so you can see some of the male astronauts in there. Now, this comes 7 months after the original one was scheduled, and as Lisa Mateo reports, this time with the right-sized suits.
I'm right beneath your feet, so don't move down.
Copy.
There was some polite maneuvering up in space as astronauts Christina Cook and Jessica Meir made their way outside the International Space Station to replace a battery. Meir walked hand over hand. Cook hitched a ride on a robotic arm.
I think we're ready for the bat swap if you guys want to lead us through that.
For the first time in history, two female astronauts are spacewalking together.
Certainly women have walked in space before, 15 in fact, 14 of those NASA astronauts. But this is the first time it's been all women, and that's generated a lot of excitement.
The first all-female spacewalk was supposed to happen back in March with Cook and astronaut Anne McLean. But only one medium-sized torso spacesuit was available, so both women could not participate. Since then, NASA designed a more one-size-fits-all spacesuit, making way for Friday's historic spacewalk.
Do you hear me?
President Trump spoke directly to the astronauts as they were finishing up their work, some 260 miles above the Earth.
That's great.
This is really just us doing our job. At the same time, we recognize that it is a historic achievement, and we do, of course, want to give credit to all of those that came before us.
and they're hopeful there will be many more all-female spacewalks to come. Lisa Mateo, CBS News, New York.
Astronaut Christina Cook is 7 months into an 11-month space flight that will be the longest by a woman.